engage in processes that revolve around various initiatives that take place outside of ICANN walls, both in Geneva, in New York, and in many different places around the world. We have a number of guests that are with us today to speak about various parts of the agenda. The agenda that was listed is actually slightly different to the order in which we'll be tackling issues. We've somehow listed them as challenges. They're not so-called, not so much challenges, but actually issues that need to be dealt with, where ICANN's presence needs to be felt, and where the community needs to bring its input and its feedback to ICANN staff that go and participate in these different fora. We've got sitting at the table the chair of the Board Working Group on Internet Governance, Matthew Shears. I have to my right Tarek Kamal. And then as we go through, I'll introduce each person in turn. I think they're well-known members of the community. I hope that my co-chairs, Rafiq Damak and Yongom Lee, will be joining us soon. They're probably in another session. I know a number of sessions are late. And finally, one piece of housekeeping advice, which is that when you speak, please say your name before you speak, because we have interpretation in Spanish. And I understand that, I think in French as well, maybe? Maybe French, yeah. So we have interpretation, and therefore the interpreters need to say the name of the person. It's a lot easier. So that's where we are, and without any further ado, I think that we can just start with an introduction from Tarek Kamal, who is the head of Government Engagement Department in ICANN, to really give us a background or on an evolving internet political ecosystem. Tarek, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Olivier. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this session. And I'm delighted to participate with the cross-community working group on IAG. I will be trying to start with more or less a few questions or observations that we could share together while we go forward about specifically the changing and evolving landscape of internet governance on a global level, as well as ICANN's role within this changing and evolving IG landscape, and how far should we really stay engaged, and what are the priorities in this case for our engagement as ICANN within our technical mandate, together with the other technical and sister organization, the ISTAR organization. The first question that I'm starting with is related. Do we start to see some symptoms of fatigue of internet governance issues as we have known them for the last 10 years, and a change or shift in handling them? So that's the first question. I'm asking this because we have seen definitely that the UNG government group of experts last June did not necessarily come to a conclusion. We have seen them, the CSTD of enhanced cooperation did not come to a conclusion, and other examples as well that I don't want to list at the time being. There are questions about the amount of government participation and business participation in the IGF, in the global IGF, although we see definitely a booming participation on national and regional IGFs, but still the question is there. Do we see some global fatigue after the IANA transition has been handled as such that the classical mode of handling internet governance issues, there are symptoms of fatigue? The next question, do we see some thematical and sectoral shift in the discussion more than global internet governance topics as they were, cross-sectoral and on a global level, since if we assume that this fatigue is there and true, I don't know, I mean, we need to think about it together, then maybe we start to see some shifts of some of the discussions moving in, towards a sectoral discussion, thematical discussion, more of internet policies as such, WTO is an example. I'm not saying necessarily that they are UN-based. They are UN and non-UN-based as such. But we see the different sectors maybe coming together and say, okay, if you are not solving the overall issues in global discussion related to IG, let's go back within our consortia, within our platforms that we use to work, and maybe handle some of our challenges. And probably they want us around as technical community to be there to provide our input, because it is needed, the experience is needed, the input of the multi-stakeholder community is needed as such. So we might see this shift moving more to sectoral discussions, moving more to thematical discussion in different places. As we see, the GCS was one of the examples, the internet and jurisdiction movement of Bertrand de la Chapelle is another example. Third example, WTO discussion, G20 and G7 discussion. I'm throwing questions. I'm not necessarily claiming that there are answers. In this case, how far should we, as ICANN community, put our priorities for participation to be there, providing our input, technical input and know-how within this new evolving discussions that are of relevance? And again, I'm saying they probably are welcoming our input, even in the different fora, not necessarily rejecting. And one of the examples that I have just seen and wanted to share with you within the last couple of 10 days, when I was with Joran at the GSMA, that there are evolving discussions related to the technical evolution of the 5G and Internet of Things that are happening on a wide scale within the internet service provider and the mobile providers as such within the GSMA. The question becomes how this would affect the future of the overall technical internet ecosystem and hence the DNS as such. How far should we be engaged with these mobile providers that are investing now a lot of investment in the 5G and think they are going to shape the technical evolution of not only the mobile communication, but the internet communication and broadband communication, because they are providing the new platform. Do we need to be there as a technical community to provide them with our input within GSMA platforms and a lot? And they are quite a well-enabled community. And again, we have seen signals that they are welcoming our input. So I wanted to put this in front of the CCWG for the discussions today and going forward, so that we, while we continue to be active at ITU Fora related to issues and related to naming and addressing and interest of the technical community, while we would continue to be supportive of the global and national regional IGFs, but we also need to be cognizant of what's happening in front of us globally in the different fora, as I mentioned, including the cybersecurity processes of The Hague and others, and think wisely together where to prioritize our engagement, our resources, because from another point of view, we can be everywhere. So we need to prioritize for ourselves, and we get feedback where should the staff also and ICANN.org put our priorities while we go forward within these things. So I just wanted to start by this introduction. And back to you, Olivier, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much, Tarek. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking, and thank you for kicking the ball into play. You've touched onto quite a few topics, and we've got an agenda which will take us through some of those topics so that we've got a little bit of a structure as to what to address first. You've spoken about the IP addressing resources, and I think the first part of our discussion would be about the coordination and distribution of internet identifiers. So not only the IP addresses, but we're talking about top-level domains, and the discussions that are taking place at the ITU, WTSA, at the Planet Potentiary, and the ITU. There are discussions happening on the World Trade Organization e-commerce agenda. And of course, there's a big discussion here regarding geographical names at the top level. For this, we have Pablo Hironoja from APNIC. Nigel Hickson from ICANN staff, and Marilyn Cade, who is a well-known participant in ICANN and from the BC, the business constituency. I'm trying to reduce the number of acronyms being used here. This is quite a loose discussion, and I'd also like to make it interactive with the audience. So if anybody wishes to also speak on these issues, could they please make themselves known? I think we should have a flying mic for people that are behind us, but those people around the table can then point to me, and I'll put them in the queue. I've seen Marilyn Kate throwing things around, so let's start with Marilyn, please.
My name is Marilyn Cade. I guess that could have been the black flag of defeat, but as you guys all know, I don't believe in defeat. Tarek, I'm going to respond. Some of you know that I like to speak in parables and use pictures as illustration. I see where we are as a new cycle. And I have the benefit of looking backward because I've lived through previous cycles. What I'm seeing myself and experiencing is every few years, innovation and technology and new ideas begin to drive new opportunities in the uses and applications of technology. But also the uses of technology begin to affect the scope and scale of the present policy situation or issues that are in front of us. In 2009, I was a principal in a project called the G20 ICT Policy Project, which was about convincing the G20 heads of state that ICT should become part of the G20 and the G8 agenda. So I saw at that time, you know, up until that time, believe me, heads of state, except for President Bill Clinton, because I told him to. I'm joking. But up until that time, heads of state were not so much talking about ICTs. And I think, or the internet. And I think I look at where we are now. When you ask, you know, are the questions dramatically changing? I think to some extent they're maturing. As some issues mature and evolve, we began to find some solutions, but then we find that complexity, the more integrated technology is and the internet is into our daily life or is new capabilities of technology, then all of a sudden we have lots of unanswered questions because citizens' daily lives are affected. And when that happens, that means we elevate the concern of elected and appointed political leaders. So the other comment I'm just going to make is I've spent most of my technical career at AT&T and working in the computer sector and the internet sector and working at most of those ITU, UN, at most of the UN expert agencies, WIPO, ITU, WTO, ILO, the entire alphabet, OECD. And one of the challenges is how those institutions and organizations train their staff to keep up with the kinds of changes that are going on, and particularly because in many of those organizations, if the senior officials are elected, and this is true of policymakers as well, they're not necessarily elected because of their in-depth understanding of the implications of technology. So I think that the engagement of ICANN and of the iSTARS and of this community here in those working activities at that alphabet, long alphabetical list of agencies, intergovernmental and regional, is absolutely essential to help to be even an expert advisor.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. I've seen Jim Prendergast earlier put his hand up. So, Jim, you have a floor.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Jim Prendergast, the Galway Strategy Group. I guess, Tarek, you covered a heck of a lot of ground there to the point where I couldn't even keep up with it. What direction have – I'm going to put a question back to you since you put many to us. What direction have you gotten from the board as far as the scope of the engagement activities that you and your team and others that have – responsibility in this area, you know, how far should you be going? How thin should you be spreading yourself? Because you can't cover everything that's out there.
No, thank you for asking this question. And we are fortunate to have a board work group on internet governance that is looking into these issues while we go forward. So it is clear that the board work group on internet governance, and maybe we invite Matthew also to say a few words about it, that they recognize that there are priorities. And when it comes to issues related to naming and addressing, if they come up in ITU forum or other, definitely ICANN needs to be very visible and very vocal because that's directly our remit. Otherwise, we are talking about a collaborative engagement and about a more or less selective engagement based on thematical issues. And the board is also looking for community input in these different thematic priorities, as such, whether they are jurisdiction, cybersecurity, human rights, or trade, or data protection, and privacy. But I just wanted to describe that we are witnessing the shift, and as Marlin has said, to organizations that are looking forward to our expertise as a community, not necessarily only as ICANN.org, but as ISTAR community. So we need to engage in a dialogue together, okay, because I don't have the answer necessarily about the prioritization, so that we maybe have this prioritization as a technical community together while we move forward. Matthew, please, maybe you want to comment?
And Matthew Shears, Chair of the Board Working Group on Internet Governance.
Yeah, thanks, Olivier, Tarek. It's a great question. So what the Board Working Group on Internet Governance is doing is going through a process with Tarek and his team and with Teresa in trying to bring what I would characterize as a slightly more strategic and prioritized approach to some of the internet governance issues that the board is particularly interested in, and obviously that would reflect what Tarek is doing and others and what the community is interested in. So that process is underway. What we're trying to do is we're trying to ensure that we have a feel for what's coming, not only what do we have to deal with immediately, but what's coming down the road. And in that sense, it's an important, that's very important for the task for the board to, and issue for the board to know about, is what are we facing or potentially facing in terms of an internet governance challenge. Our immediate priorities, I think Tarek has, he's shared with us where his team is engaging. It comprises a lot of the traditional places that you might imagine, but as he said, we have to recognize and adapt to an evolving internet governance space, and I would just reinforce what he said. It's not that the challenge of internet governance has gone away. It's just that the challenge and the challenges are just as pressing. It's just that we're finding them in a more distributed environment, if you will. And that poses challenges, as Tarek said, in terms of resourcing and other things. So that is an important part of the conversation that we're having at the moment with government engagement and MSSI. Thanks.
Thanks for this. And I welcome Rafiq Damak to the table, the co-chair from the GNSO, for this working group. Now, next we have Steve Del Bianco.
Thank you, Olivier. Tarek, you spoke a little bit about ICANN's engagement at places like IGF, and I was there this year on day zero when ICANN helped to populate a panel on alternative identifiers, the handles and DOA, digital object architecture. And ICANN was well represented, and it was well organized, but at the end it got just a tad too defensive about domain names and a tad too aggressive about criticizing DOA. So I'm fine-tuning it here, but let's continue and engage on that topic, because that topic is a confrontation, not an intersection. That's a confrontational topic. And so we need to handle it with technical people with the diplomacy skills and definitely state the shortcomings of a half-baked approach and talk about the evolving needs. But in the end, I think we want to be careful to embrace the evolution of technology. And it could be that domain name and numbers could evolve into something else. And I think this community would be right there to take it up in a multi-stakeholder way, as opposed to having that flip over to a multilateral environment, right? So that if we indicate too much disregard or animosity for alternatives to names and numbers, then it won't find a home with us, will it? So, and then I wanted to segue to your point about businesses not being abundantly attended in Geneva, and you're right. But I don't think it'll be a problem next year, because I was at the IGF in Geneva, and most of the sessions were civil society, and most of those, no, half of those that I attended were very aggressively expressing concerns that the Global South and maybe academics have grave concerns about platforms, what they call parasitic platforms. You wonder what I'm talking about. So Lyft and Uber, a parasitic platform that exploits the fact that people in some lesser developed cities can earn income driving. The concern about data. Data is the new oil, and American and North American, European companies are sucking the data out of these countries. There were complaints about Airbnb and HomeAway because it might impact the stock of affordable housing. Even Amazon and Etsy took shots at these. Well, I've just named all of the members of NetChoice, so you can bet that we will be at every IGF attempting to understand what the concerns are and responding when appropriate. And I think part of the response is to highlight that there's a lot of upside in economic opportunity that's created for people, and that the data can feed an ecosystem of economic opportunity and income that isn't available otherwise. And I think that the conversation could steer that way. Now, Andrew Mack, for instance, is exploring some new ventures on new platforms for agricultural improvements and opportunity. So whenever possible, the business community needs to engage, but not just to defend, but to explain and explore the opportunities we bring.
Thank you, Steve. Andrew, was that a follow-up to Steve? Okay, quick follow-up from Andrew Mack.
Quickly, yes, Andrew Mack, thank you. I was just in Colombia and talking about these kinds of new business models and about the opportunity that they bring. I think we want to take a look at this in a much less static way. The idea that we have that there are great big, you know, data-sucking companies from the global north, and that there are victims in the global south. This is changing. This is putting on its head. I was meeting 3 days ago, 4 days ago, coming here with Diego Molano, who was the former ICT minister of Colombia, who hosted us when we went to Cartagena, and we were talking about a project that we're working on called Agromovil, which is a kind of an Uber for crops, linking up producers with consumers, with markets and transporters. He was also talking about a group called Rappi, which is you can order anything basically in Bogota. And the thing that strikes me is two. Number one is that we shouldn't think of this debate as being between North and South, and that we definitely want to see and we want to encourage the openness for these new business models, because they're being developed not just in the global north, but also in the global south.
Thanks for this, Andrew. Quick comment from Tariq, and I think that you have to leave
Steve,
at some point shortly.
I will be back, but respond to Steve. ICANN will never definitely stand against any evolution of new technologies. And this has been the position very clearly of the management as well as the board, as well as even David Conrad and his team got very early engaged in the discussion. Okay, fine. Sometimes we sound defensive. That's true. That's natural. That's human.
No, we don't.
but it will be never the case. We have to embrace every technology, whatever it is, wherever it is coming from, and be part of the discussion and try to encourage them to be active within the multi-stakeholder platforms. Thank you.
Thank you, Tariq. Now, Steve has alluded to DOA, DONA, the perceived threats and challenges. Are these threats and challenges, Pablo Hinojosa? I've got problems with your Hinojosa.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised about the agenda here that refers to challenges to the distribution of internet identifiers. And And then it talks about sort of discussions, mostly at the global level, related to IP addresses of top-level domains, for example, at the ITU. So perhaps, yeah, I prefer to frame the discussion in a more positive way and talk more about opportunities rather than challenges. I mean, I cannot speak on behalf of others, but from APNIC's perspective, we try to engage positively and constructively and try to maximize areas of collaboration. And this has surely been the case of the ITU, for example. Even if there are different ideas or approaches to each issues at the ITU, where there are many different voices as well there from member states, we think that there is indeed some level of shared objectives, particularly in the development sector. We in IPNIC, for example, have a very good collaboration at the regional level with the regional ITU office with an annual workshop on IPv6 and direct country assistance. It happens that many ITU members are also APNIC members, and they are interested to learn more about how to deploy IPv6. So this has been a very good collaboration, to the degree that last year at the WTDC in Buenos Aires, after many very difficult discussions and negotiations and texts about resolutions, for example, Resolution 63 on IPv6, I mean, for the first time, if you see the result of it, there was a direct mention in the results of that resolution of cooperation between the ITU and the regional internet registries, which, I mean, long time they were referred generically on a footnote, not directly. So I think that's a very positive thing, and it is also very much because of the work that ICANN and the RIRs and the organizations present there sort of engaged positively in this. So more than challenges, I think it depends on how we like to engage with these processes, as Steve said. Can I speak more, or shall I leave it there?
Yeah, unless somebody kicks you out, you can speak a little more if you wish, if you have more to say.
Yeah, I have a couple of more things to say. I mean, Tarek mentioned a long list, indeed, of processes and organizations, mostly intergovernmental, multilateral, at the international arena. But I think that for us, most of our engagements are in the regional space. And of course, in the case of APNIC Asia Pacific. And after the IANA stewardship transition, there has been a shift in our commitments, mostly because our most important engagements are happening less in the governmental, in the global intergovernmental arena, and more at the regional level with the technical community. And the way we think about this is that somehow we achieve some security on our governance system with the transition. I mean, it doesn't mean that we need to leave those behind. We really cannot take the eye off those, of course. But I mean, the most important engagements at the end is with the technical community, building capacity and supporting infrastructure and development. However, so I don't see like that fatigue that Tarek was saying. I see also a shift, less sort of about governance issues, about who does what and how, and more about, for example, security. And security is a challenge. Security is indeed a challenge. And I think there is an opportunity to collaborate with other organizations in that arena in a positive and constructive kind of way. So I will leave it there.
Thanks, Pablo. What about these recurring proposals from some member countries about country internet registries and the allocation of IP addresses being provided through different channels rather than the current channels? Is that still on the table somehow?
I mean, I think that will continue to be the case, of course, and I really hope that more and more within the governmental arena, those can be compensated as sort of the trend of the discussions have been, which is towards more recognition, collaboration, and acceptance of the importance of the technical community in this.
Thanks, Pablo. Marilyn, Kate?
Thank you, Marilyn. Kate speaking. I want to make a quick observation and follow up before Nigel speaks, if I might. I too expect those proposals to continue from certain member states, but I have spent many of my days in some of those working groups at the ITU and elsewhere, and I want to make an observation. In 1998, 11 countries accounted for the majority of the 147 million internet users. And between 2001 and 2005, when we grew to 1.4 billion users, we found that we had a much higher growing awareness and participation of governments. And at one point, what I saw, Pablo, was we would be in a room and 60 to 70% of the governments would be cautious, government representatives would be cautious, if not negative. Today, I think I can count the shift to there being only five or six or seven that are still particularly focused on a shift in participation and oversight. And I think one of the reasons that's happening is because of the work and the educational exchanges and the awareness that is growing up.
Thank you, Marilyn. So the regional internet registries have been doing a lot of work. I'll turn over to Nigel Hickson for the amount of work that ICANN has done in these fora to explain and somehow communicate with.
Thank you very much, Olivia. Nigel Hickson, Government Engagement. I just wanted to be very brief. I mean, as various people have already said, and as Matthew Shears has alluded to, ICANN continues to watch developments across a number of arena. The plenipotentiary in 2018 is taking place in November. The regional preparation process for that has already started. Different regions put forward different proposals, and fortunately the regional internet registries, ISOC, ICANN and others are involved in those regional preparations where we're invited. We're not invited to all the regional preparations. Some are just purely member states, but the majority do welcome stakeholders in, and therefore we're able to understand the proposals that are being put forward and perhaps influence in some way, provide information, etc. And I think it's fair to say that we probably will see some proposals relating to geographic names, perhaps country names, at the plenipotentiary. We might see proposals relating to IPv6, for example. But that, as Pablo has rightly said, is an opportunity as much as anything else to be able to promote the adoption of IPv6 in the value chain. In terms of the work that the ITU might do on geographical names or country names or other types of names, well, we'll just have to discuss that. Clearly, we think that we have quite a good locus here discussing it in ICANN, but thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Nigel. Now, what about the identifiers in the World Trade Organization e-commerce agenda? That's a bit of a new forum, new opening. How is ICANN dealing with this? And in fact, I'm sort of giving an open question here. Is anyone else following this? And how are they getting involved?
So, Nigel? I mean, clearly the multi, as Tarek said, there are lots of dynamics in terms of discussion of internet issues. And here we're seeing, in a number of different international fora, discussion of internet issues, not necessarily discussion of internet governance issues, although under the WSIS umbrella there are still internet governance issues. For instance, at the WTO ministerial, e-commerce was discussed, and whether in particular the WTO ought to, if you like, re-energise a discussion on e-commerce. As such, member states didn't agree to have a work track on e-commerce, and a number of countries have got together and are having plurilateral discussions based in Geneva. We have no access to them. I'm not saying we necessarily should, but they are discussing e-commerce. Part of those discussions of e-commerce touch on the domain name system. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what might come out of those discussions.
Thank you, Nigel. Marilyn, is the business community involved in the World Trade Organization discussions?
Of course, and we may even have somebody in the business community in the audience that might be able to speak more to what is going on. So do I see a volunteer? Otherwise, I'll make an I see a volunteer.
Well, not necessarily a volunteer, but there's a question that's been posted in the chat. So maybe that might address what you were trying to raise.
Have to read
it's from Bill Drake. What evidence is there that the WTO is doing something about identifiers? That's hardly the main focus.
Right, I'm not quite sure that's the answer to the question, but there's another question which requires an answer.
Right.
Marilyn, Kate.
Let me make a very high-level comment about the work of the WTO and businesses' overall engagement at the WTO. Generally, and I have worked at the WTO in the past, but it's been quite a long time ago. Generally, this is a trade organization, and there has always been an effort on the part of business to encourage the adherence to the core mission at WTO, because business also doesn't want to see a lot of freelancing going on in these highly specialized agencies. That just adds additional work and burden for everybody to bring additional experts over and over. But when you look at the underlying elements to support e-commerce, it is natural that there will be questions about the role of what some people will think of as kind of platform elements, and unique identifiers will fall into that discussion. I have not seen any formal formalized examination of the issues, but I think that there are some suggestions from some of the member states of WTO that are asking whether there are elements related to trade. I've seen no formal agreement to move forward one way or the other. So to Bill's point, you know, where's the evidence? Now, it is always true that member states in a ITU organization can get together bilaterally or plurilaterally and talk among themselves. That doesn't mean a topic makes it to the agenda. It deserves watching, I would say. But it doesn't, just because there's a discussion doesn't always mean a topic then becomes a formal part of an agenda.
Thank you, Marilyn. And I'm going to turn to people who are sitting behind me because I don't have an eye behind. But if anybody wishes to comment, is there any commenting on the specifically on the Internet identifiers discussion? There is a flying mic. If you do, please make yourself known. The last part on this is the geographical names. I'm going to be provocative and ask whether it's for the United Nations to deal with these.
No.
I've got one no in the room at the moment. Any yeses? Okay. Well, that pretty much resolves the issue. Right. So let's move on to the next thing, and that's the tension between the multilateral and multi-stakeholder forum. And of course, we are all well aware of what multi-stakeholder is, at least in the ICANN context. Many of us take part in the Internet Governance Forum, which is another part of multi-stakeholder fora. But some are saying, of course, that the multi-stakeholder system is not particularly efficient, doesn't really reach any decisions. It's a talk shop in the IGF. It's a cabal, or whatever you would call it in ICANN. Insert your favorite word. So where does this tension come from, and is this getting worse, or is this easing? We've got a number of names here. On here, I've got Marilyn, Jimson Olafuye, Jorge Cancio, who I think was here, but he might have popped out, perhaps. And also, Tatiana, you're also in for this. Who wishes to speak to this? Oh, so we'll start with Martin Butterman.
No, thanks, Olivier. Just making very clear from my perspective, I do have a government background from some time ago. Multilateral doesn't exclude multi-stakeholder. I think whatever we do in the multi-stakeholder model, it's great that there's multilateral backing of that. So we just should make sure that is supported. And on the other hand, what we also see is that sometimes from governments getting together side, there's an assumption of multi-stakeholderism, which isn't the same as ours. Now we can do two things. One is say, hey, this is not correct. We stay away from it. The other thing is let's get involved and let's get it moving. So from both sides of understanding of multi-stakeholderism can be, let's get closer together. And I'm very much in favor of the latter. That's why I do participate to those as well.
Thank you, Martin. Tanya, did you wish to speak? I'll turn over to Nigel Hickson, because part of the sub-question in there is how do governments engage in ICANN processes and also in other processes outside of ICANN. So, Nigel, just for a quick rundown of what the main difference is.
Yes, well, I think Olivia, I think most people can engage, so to speak, on this question. I mean, what we do see is in the ICANN multi-stakeholder model, of course, the governments have a direct input into the decision-making process, wherein in other multilateral settings, stakeholders may well have an engagement, but not so much an engagement in the decision-making process. And this has been subject of a number of debates and a number of papers in recent times. The Internet Society has done some important work on this, and Larry Strickling, the former head of NTIA, wrote a paper on the multi-stakeholder model and how different people engage. But I think when it comes what it comes down to in ICANN, and people like Marilyn have got extensive experience in this, where we can engage as stakeholders in the technical community, we do engage. We engage as part of the technical community, the business community engage, the civil society engage as well. And we engage to the maximum ability we have, whether it's at the ITU, whether it's at whether it's at WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, which perhaps we might touch on in terms of in the work they're doing on geographical names, etc., or whether it be at the UN. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Nigel. I've got Jim Sunolofuye here at the table, who has been involved quite extensively with the CSTD Enhanced Cooperation. Has there really been a lot of enhanced cooperation?
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jim Sunolofuye. Good afternoon, everyone. Enhanced cooperation. I think what we're doing here is enhanced cooperation. We are all collaborating to discuss a very important issue. So let's take it at that face value. And that's where I will begin, because that's how I see it. But the last time we met, I was full of optimism that, yes, there will be a resolution, the working group on the enhanced cooperation, the United Nations Commission for Science and Technology for Development, working group on enhanced cooperation on the international public policy matters pertaining to the Internet that was on then. We've concluded the work now. I was fully optimistic that we'll have some consensus recommendation, because that was what the General Assembly wanted the group to come up with. But let me just take us back a little for the sake of those that do not know what we're talking about, really. After the 2005 WSIS, there were two important outcomes. That is Internet Governance Forum, that is one track, and then Enhanced Cooperation, the second track, to enable governments on an equal footing to make policy with regard to the Internet. And, of course, in collaboration with other stakeholders. At that time, of course, it had to do with the real remit of ICANN, that is Management of Critical Internet Resources, that is the IP names, numbers, and protocol parameters. And by 2016, we know that that has been quite handled in a way that management of the critical internet resources is now in the hands of the community. But back then, it was USG that was doing the sole oversight of that. And that led to a consultation in 2012, open consultation by the United Nations, and wherein all stakeholders expressed their opinion on what it is, how do we achieve it. And then the GA later recommended that a working group should be set up by the chair of the CSTD. And the first working group started in 2014 and ended in 2016. They could not come up with a consensus position recommendation. But one vital outcome, you know, was evident. And what was that? That's that there was a correspondence group that investigated. Has there been enhanced cooperation at all since 2005? And it came out that there's been enhanced cooperation in many places, actually. Is it with regard to cybercrime, when we have the Budapest Convention? Is it even in other places? There's been a lot of collaboration on many, many issues on cybersecurity. So that there was clear evidence that there's been some form of enhanced cooperation. And the output of that went back to GA, the General Assembly. And then, since there's been progress, how can we further enhance cooperation? That was why the second track was set up in 2016. And I've been seeing Ambassador Fonseca, and I don't know if he's in the hall.
Oh, right, okay. In the corner, watching you.
Oh, great. Our distinguished ambassador was the chair. And he did an excellent job. In fact, that was like the toughest job I've really seen someone do, because there was extreme tension in the House throughout the discussion. It was clear progress has been made earlier when it comes to enhanced cooperation. And then, but the key issue is that how do we enable government itself to really do internet protocol policy, you know, international internet policy? Yes, we all agree. The governments should. They should. Why not? Should be able to meet. But the issue is, should we set up a new mechanism? That was the problem. Should that be a new mechanism? Maybe like ITU, maybe like UNESCO, a big stuff like that. Well, business feel that we don't need such regime or structure to tackle international public policy issues. In fact, the very nature of internet, distributive, structural mechanism, just like here, everybody is involved. That is the nature of the internet itself. So if you want to really address the issue of policy, then it has to follow the same underlying structure. That is the whole idea. So over time, we have made progress in the sense that majority now have moved to the side whereby, yes, we agree, enhanced cooperation has been going on, and we could use a system mechanism. So there are a lot of existing mechanisms, like the CSTD itself. If a CSTD, as government discourse, the private sector, they also have the right to be able to speak. If I'm in the working group, one of the representatives of business, it was like, I also have the status like a state, so I've recognized my own rights representing business, Maryland, also a member. So we have the liberty to speak, and our opinion is always heard. So it will just be a natural existing mechanism to handle that. There are many countries that have really come to that point, and many countries that have said, yes, we should actually, that should be a compromise. CSTD can do that. If you look at the mandate of CSTD, it has the mandate to advise the GA on public policy. So it's already there. So that was it. And just one or two countries said, no, we just want another institution like ITU. And so, where is the fund going to come from? We business, we are going to be engaging in that. We don't want a lot of, like we're saying, should I can't be involved? I can't should be involved in all these things. But if you set up a new one now, there'll be another bureaucracy again and things like that. So why not let it flow naturally? So we got a lot of people by the side of, let us use existing mechanism, but only one or two countries, intractable, you know, blew it up. That if you don't agree that we should have a new institutional mechanism, then there is no recommendation. Whereas there has been fantastic recommendation based on effective coordination of the chair on characteristics of enhanced cooperation, inclusivity, collaborative, international, you know, it should be respective of all stakeholders, you know, those wonderful stuff. So there has been some progress. From my perspective, it didn't really fail because some people have an opinion that, oh, it failed, good riddance. No. A lot of stakeholders have moved to the side that, yes, enhanced cooperation is already taking place all over the place. Okay? And then we can use the existing mechanism that we have. That's where the overwhelming majority, you can say 99% of people, that we have moved, they have moved to that point that we should use existing mechanism. So we made a lot of progress, and I think I kind of need to engage.
Yeah, does the process require unanimous approval for...
Absolutely. Not the kind of consensus that we do in ICANN. When you say, okay, rough consensus.
There's no rough consensus.
Nothing like that. As long as just one person says, I object to this, then everything is, it will not work. I'm sure the chair is here. I'm happy. So he will be able to talk more about it. But I really commend, not that he is here, because he's here, I really commend the chair. He did everything possible to really moderate, to get a consensus. And everybody saw the effort he made, and it was well appreciated.
Thank you very much for this, Jimson. And yes, it does sound like quite a hard task to have unanimous approval on absolutely everything on a process that's taken several years to complete. Are there any questions or comments on this process? Yes, please, if you could introduce yourself and make your comment.
Thank you. Israel Rosas. I'm working for the government of Mexico, but I'm here in my personal capacity. I agree with Martin, we can have both multilateral and multi-stakeholder efforts. However, the governments who promote the multi-stakeholder model have the big opportunity to show and share in multilateral spaces and mechanisms the results and outcomes of multi-stakeholder spaces, namely the IEFs of outcomes, I mean the BPFs, the dynamic coalitions, the connecting and enabling the next billion efforts, or the ICANN discussions and processes when related. So I think that that should be the main compromise from our side. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this contribution. I do have a question, actually. In all these discussions that take place in those fora, is ICANN sometimes taken as an example of a properly working multi-stakeholder system, especially with regards to the government engagement through the government advisory committee?
Yeah, excellent question, Olivier. And this is Jimson Olufuye. I cited the ecosystem in ICANN as one of the places whereby enhanced cooperation is already happening, really. But I also listened to other sides. Some people say, no, it's not happening here because government is only advisory. Okay, government is only advisory. They don't really take their decision. But I still believe that enhanced cooperation is happening here because things are evolving. If we are talking about the internet, it's distributive, it involves all stakeholders, everybody have the right to be listened to, and you get the best, okay, moving forward. So on that basis, governments are there, they are effectively very active and engaging. So I see ICANN as a model in a way. If we have something like ICANN in ITU, I would definitely say, okay, well, why not? We can take up the discussion in ITU, but it's not possible. Okay. Then to the point raised on multilateral and multi-stakeholder, there was once a definition given, I think it was Ambassador Fonseca as well that said it, that in Brazil, multilateralism actually means everyone, all stakeholders are involved. So it's a different notion that we have around here, you know. So,
thank you, Jimson. Steve Del Bianco.
I can't discuss at exercising the multi-stakeholder model is mixed. We do well on some things, we take too long on others. But I really believe that a multilateral advocate would choose ICANN to judge it by its outcomes, not just its processes. And ICANN is about to create an excuse for the ire of the multilateral world in that we're making significant adjustments to who is. And you should never underestimate the opportunity that creates for governments to claim that ICANN has abrogated its responsibility. And I realize that DPAs from Europe are, and DPAs from many countries are advocating the very same adjustments that we're making. But we should understand that governments don't speak with one voice. There are data protection authorities in a government, but there are also consumer protection authorities in the same government. So I ask you, which of those branches of government dominate at the United Nations and the ITU? I don't think it's the privacy folks. So we should look ahead a little bit that as we are adjusting who is in ways that will reduce the visibility of websites that could or could not contribute to consumer protection concerns, fraud, and abuse, that it is going to become a bit of a problem for ICANN with that crowd. It might be fantastic with DPAs, but it'll be a bit of a problem with the multilateral crowd at the United Nations.
Thank you for this, Stephen. I think we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit in our agenda with regards to who is. We'll come back to this topic, actually. It's a good input. Greg Shatton.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I just wanted to mention first that the Internet Society has actually now begun a collaborative governance project, which is being headed up by Larry Strickling. And it is in very, very early days. Right now it's basically looking just for people to kind of join the group of people who will kind of be part of the mass. And I'll put the link in the chat. So if you just go to that page, you can see what is being planned. This is hopefully going to be a significant contribution by ISOC to the discussion and strength of the multi-stakeholder model. Second thing to note, as I've been in a working group which had quite a lot of government participation, while the issue was never really discussed, there were a few times when references were made to the Tunis agenda and its application to ICANN working groups, as opposed to, you know, we never really discussed it. Clearly, you know, the idea here is that we're on a completely equal footing and no, you know, people being put into corners or whatever you might think the Tunis agenda does. But I thought it was interesting that at least it came up in lengthy emails where I don't think anybody else chose to engage one way or the other with that point that was being made. But it did not escape my attention that it was raised as something that they thought would be a good idea in terms of ICANN interactions. Thanks.
Right. Thanks for this, Greg. Now, okay, Youngam Lee, go ahead.
Just a quick reminder that back in 2010, none of the ITU documents had mentioned ICANN, and I think it was in 2010 that ICANN appeared in one of the ITU documents as a footnote.
Thank you, Youngam, for this fact. Matthew Shears. And if I could just say welcome also. Sorry, I didn't introduce you, Youngam Lee, the co-chair of the working group from the CCNSO. Matthew.
Thanks, Olivier. I wanted just to take this discussion about enhanced cooperation out of the ICANN space just for a moment and talk about where it is happening and where it's happening is in some surprising places. So, for example, in the development of national cybersecurity strategies, there are engagements between stakeholders in doing that, and those are very sensitive areas. It's happening or happened in Ghana, for example. I also believe it's happened in Mexico, but I'm sure the gentleman can correct me if that's not true. So these are things that when we talk about multi-stakeholder fatigue or we talk about enhanced cooperation not actually occurring, we just have to be very careful about how we talk about that, because there are very good examples that are outside our space where this is occurring, and there are many other ones as well. Thanks.
Thanks for this, Matthew. Now, cybersecurity has traditionally been the remit of government agencies and very much centered on work done behind closed doors by governments and law enforcement. Some are saying that this is opening up, and there are initiatives for multi-stakeholder processes to enter those fields, and for private sector and even civil society to take part in these processes. How real is this, Tatiana Tropina?
Thank you very much, Olivia. This is a very interesting question that I would have expected to be asked like 5 years ago. Now I'm rather expected to be asked the question, is multi-stakeholder notion behind cybersecurity or enhanced cooperation in the multi-stakeholder manner behind cybersecurity dying now? And, you know, yesterday I went to my room after a glass of wine and I was going to bed. And what prevented me from sleep is push-up notification from The Guardian. And the news said, I'm going to cite, I'm sorry. So they refer to Tim Berners-Lee. You know Tim Berners-Lee, right? One of the inventors of the Internet. One of the inventors of the World Wide Web. So he said...
Tell Windsurf about
and I'm,
this.
And I'm sorry. Complain about me to Windsurf. So he said, and I'm citing, we must regulate tech firms to prevent weaponized web. Can you imagine someone like Tim Berners-Lee saying this 10 or 15 years ago, who thought about this kind of regulation? Why are things turning like this? And what kind of influence it has to ICANN? Unfortunately, Martin Bottermann he left the room a few minutes ago, right? I really wanted to disagree with him about multi-stakeholder being nicely backed by multilateral. On the one hand, I'm always supporting the ideas that when you talk about multi-stakeholder and cybersecurity, just admit, face the truth. Some of the fora will always be multilateral. Leave governments alone and let them do their own business, right? Right. But on the other hand, I do not believe that in cybersecurity, multilateral does not represent any threat to multi-stakeholder. It does. And things do not flip, you know, like a coin overnight. It's rather when you put the frog into a very hot water, it will jump out. But if you put the frog into lukewarm water and start heating it, you will have a nice soup at the end and no one will escape. And I'm sorry for making this analogy, but this is what is going on right now. If you look at multilateral in cybersecurity, I'm really sorry for these cruel comparisons. If you look at the multilateral, it was to wake you up, guys. If you look at multilateral forum at cybersecurity, right, do we see any real outcome? We have been so scared of the United Nations at ICANN. United Nations failed big time. A global group of intergovernmental experts couldn't produce even the third report. There is no substance, really, in what UN is doing multilaterally on cybersecurity. So forget about the threat of the UN. But at the same time, they can use cybersecurity to regulate whatever they want. But if you look at another multilateral forum, like, for example, European Union, which committed to collaboration and cooperation with the industry, and which says multi-stakeholder 10 times in 15 minutes when they talk about cybersecurity, look what they're doing, and look at other discussions, they're saying multi-stakeholder, but with the governments in leading role. And it is incredible how this debate is shifting now. Look at the multi-stakeholder committee, which is talking about multi-stakeholder cooperation in cybersecurity, and it's called Public Core of the Internet, using the word public core in the group, which is going to be multi-stakeholder. It's like a red rug for a bull because there is so much confusion in this. So I do believe that why is it important for ICANN? So I'm ending my intervention right now. Things are not flipping overnight. They're getting mixed. They're getting blurred. They're getting confused. And at some point, we might not even notice, but we will be in a completely different environment. ICANN is a big player. And when Tim Berners-Lee, when European Union, when public core of the Internet are looking at things, they will see this elephant in the room. after all. And we have to keep eye on this. And I believe when Shirin, at the opening ceremony, he was talking about security and resilience, and ICANN unique mission in this, and ICANN unique mission in preserving multi-stakeholder model. I believe that it is very important to keep an eye on what is going on in IG, because ICANN and its security mission does not exist in vacuum. So this is it from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Tatiana, for this robust intervention. As a frog or a Frenchman, I feel a bit targeted with regards to the heat.
That was abusive comment against you. You're right.
I was going to turn to Pablo with regards to the regional internet registries, and certainly in APNIC. Do you feel the heat of cybersecurity?
Yeah, most definitely. And one of our engagements recently has a lot to do with bringing together the network operators and the CERT community. And here I just had a thought about what Tatiana just said, because indeed cybersecurity is a shared concern and responsibility, and I don't think there are elements that you can leave the multilateral to discuss alone. For example, the UN governmental group of experts, the 2015 report, they agreed on non-binding norms for responsible state behavior. And these norms included, for example, that there should not be activities to harm CERTs, or using CERTs to engage in malicious international activities. So this is a good idea that was discussed in an exclusively multilateral arena. But there is indeed very little awareness about the governmental group of experts and their normative processes within the CERT community. So how any of these efforts can be implemented, how these norms can transcend if there is no sort of dialogue connection between the multilateral arena and the technical community. So it is something that I think we need to reflect deeper when we prioritize, as Matthew said, our engagements and our approach to these engagements.
Thank you, Pablo. I'm going to turn to Nigel Hickson when it comes down to ICANN and cybersecurity. And we've heard about the threats to the DNS, the denial of service attacks, and so on. First, sorry, just before that, and I'm sorry, Shiva, I totally forgot. So, Shiva Subramanian Mutasami. Apologies.
Okay, Shiva Subramanian from ISOC India, Chennai, for the record. Security has been kind of a sacred area which kind of kept every other stakeholder out. There was a blanket exclusion of all other stakeholders from any security policy matters so far, and so this is changing, and that's a good thing to do. And so with security in the multilateral forum, the whole world was driven paranoid to some extent, and that could change with new ideas from the multi-stakeholder forum. So I think ICANN should push it forward and push for the security to be brought to the multi-stakeholder forum. There are some areas that are top secret that needs to be kind of closed door. Such sensitive matters or sensitive strategic matters could still be discussed in a limited way, but the broader policy aspects and whatever it is that could be consulted could be brought to the multi-stakeholder forum. Thank you.
Thank you, Shiva. Now I'll turn to Nigel Hickson on ICANN's work with cybersecurity.
Well, I'd be very brief indeed, because I think you ought to move on and discuss other things. Only to say that in the same way with other aspects, ICANN contributes to these discussions. We're able to provide factual evidence and to provide views, We obviously have a locus on cybersecurity, a fairly narrow locus in terms of DNSSEC, and as was mentioned earlier by Tariq Kamal, this year at the Mobile World Congress, we were able to engage with a number of government players and a number of business players that perhaps we don't normally see, and talk about such issues as DNSSEC, and we'll continue to do so. And I think what Tatiana said was very relevant. I mean, I think it's incontrovertible that it just makes no logical sense at all for governments to get round a table and talk about technical security issues without the experts present. I think this is now accepted by most rational thought processes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nigel. And that actually segues into the next section, which is how ICANN interacts with other organizations. I understand that ICANN has signed an MOU with the GSM Association. Tariq Kamal, would you...
Yeah, thank you. I referred to that at the beginning of my remarks at the introduction. And as I have mentioned, we are trying to look around together with you and with the board work group on internet governance about where efforts are happening related to evolution of technology as well as evolution of policies related to different aspects of the internet. We have been seeing that the GSMA is becoming quite active in putting standards. Fine, this has been classical, part of their classical role, but in addition to that, in the evolution of the 5G, and we have been witnessing with David Conrad and the office of the CTO at ICANN that the discussions on 5G and the investments in 5G going forward could have effects on the DNS, and we need definitely to be looking into this in a positive, constructive, non-defensive manner so that Steve DeLubianco is satisfied with our approach. So I think we found also from their side quite a positive attitude to how to involve ICANN and maybe the ICANN community and the ICANN players in a cross-fertilization and a discussion about this happening forward. Joran was very interested to foster this dialogue because when we look, I mean, I'm not an expert, at least anymore, when we look about routing and the discussions about routing and slicing of technologies and the new ideas that they are bringing in the 5G, would this maintain for us an open, secure, resilient internet on a global level is a question that is fairly to be put at. Fine, okay, as Shireen said this morning, ICANN is not in the center of the world, or ICANN is not in the center of the internet as such, but we ought also not to overlook that. So this MOU was put so that we have this dialogue for the benefit of both sides, and I think we ought to report to you regularly about the deliberations that are happening between the office of the CTO and about them. And if there are opportunities to have some outreach together, they are at the end a private sector-led organization as such. It would not harm after we really crystallize where do we stand and where are the areas of partnership going forward. So that's one of the examples that I was alluding to at the beginning. We need to look around, not everywhere, but where things are happening, and try to position ourselves and keep our role of relevance there as much as we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Tariq. Yes, Christopher Wilkinson, you'll have to lean over for... Oh, there's a microphone coming to you. Great.
Thank you. And thank you very much for bringing our attention to the MOU. I read it carefully. There are, in fact, rather a lot of caveats in it. And it's not quite clear exactly what you will be doing positively, because it does say quite a few things that you're not going to be doing. But that being said, I would recommend after 6 to 9 months of experience seeing if you can update it to include rather more concrete and well-defined areas of mutual cooperation. And particularly, currently, my judgment is that mobile telephone technology is moving rather faster than internet technology. This may be a phase, won't be permanent, but the scope for fifth generation and the shifts in international balance of power technologically in this area are going to be substantial, so that I think you will find that mutual cooperation with the GSM Association, whatever its official name is, will be a moving target. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. Tarek?
Thank you, Christopher. I mean, you know, two legal departments in such two organizations, ICANN and the GSMA, when they draft an MOU, how much they want to keep it generic as much as possible and not putting a lot of specifics. So what I was talking about was the real, target or the real intention behind what we are doing, not necessarily what is being put in on papers. So it's being kept generic, but that's what we have started to in the dialogue between our CEO and the CEO of the GSMA as such and the Octo team. And as I said, we will be definitely reporting about any progress that would be of significance to ICANN and ICANN community going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Tarek. Now, coming to the ISTAR organizations, is the collaboration, I guess, that ICANN is doing with the other ISTAR organizations ongoing? Is it developing? What's the status on this? And I might turn to Nigel for that. Or Tarek? And then Pablo. sounds like an interesting question. Pablo, you did say I don't want to talk for the ISTARs, but you can speak certainly for APNIC.
I think the question was how I can collaborate with other organizations on the internet ecosystem. And, I can only say that collaboration has always been very positive, very constructive, and there has been a lot of work there with many different staff of many different areas, the technical, government, stakeholder engagements with all offices of ICANN, Geneva, D.C., Los Angeles, and for us in APNIC, particularly a very good relationship with the office in Singapore. And that is very good. Coordination is obviously not always easy and requires a lot of effort, and I think we have managed to find ways in which we put and invest those energies that are required for the coordination. And for us in particular, something that is very important is for this collaboration to help support and save resources in order to avoid duplication and in order to for the collaboration to actually support each other's effort in a way that we can scale that up or that we can engage in a way that is not neither counterproductive nor duplicative nor with lack of certain coordination. So in general, I think it has been very positive.
Thanks for this, Pablo. Tarek?
Yeah, I might add, and maybe Matthew also wants to talk about what we are discussing in the board work group on internet governance in this aspect about the three-layered model that we have been discussing. But we work with the ISTARs very closely. We are sister organizations such. But we categorize our cooperation as sometimes we have together a leadership role when it comes to naming and addressing, whether it was at WITSA or one of the ITU event. Fine, then we need to become vocal with the community and work closely together. Sometimes we are more into a little bit in the backseat, role, working together, coordinating while being at third-party organizations as such, discussing issues related to jurisdiction, discussing issues related to human rights, discussing issues related to privacy and data protection, more on a thematic approach. So it differs, okay, as such. But I think that the mechanisms for working together and collaborating has been well established and going through several stress tests and proved really that they are well established and quite efficient. So.
Thanks for this, Tariq. Now, I was actually going to turn to Steve regarding the GDPR, circling back into this GDPR topic. I don't know whether you wanted to speak about this topic first or...
Yeah, GDPR.
Ah, right. Well, we've spoken
about... Glad we're doing
it.
Puerto Rico, GDPR.
We've spoken to some extent, but the question is that really an issue that is all about ICANN, or is it a wider issue, or a more global political issue, this GDPR thing?
Two things. There are global efforts to increase privacy protection, so it's Europe happens to be the tip of the spear, but it's a global entity, but it comes from privacy advocates and privacy authorities primarily, and I believe that will clash, and already is clashing even in Europe, with other elements within the very same governments who view certain aspects of who is as essential for the job they do at protecting consumers. So that clash will not play well for ICANN within the multilateral environments, which I spoke of at the UN. So that's the only thing of relevance, I think, to this discussion, that I don't believe this will improve ICANN's position vis-a-vis that rivalry. And then if you have any time left, we're running out of time now, but I wanted to share a little bit about the way that the IGF USA is organizing our program for this year. I see Marilyn here, Andrew Max here, Dustin Phillips from ICANN Wiki. There is Judith Hellerstein and Lori Schulman, Greg Shatton. We've organized a heck of a program this year, and in it we are trying to make it so clear that governments do protect their citizens from content and conduct, whether it happens on the telephone, in the mail, or on the internet. There's never been a place that internet is somehow outside of the realm of governance. So just to give you a few of the topics that we're going to cover at this year's IGF USA are the future of work in the new economy, future of work, Internet's impact on our social, cultural, and democratic values. Think about interference in elections. Balancing privacy concerns with security, connectivity, and innovation. There's the GDPR boogeyman. Competition. Should the government regulate online platforms when they achieve market dominance, taking into account competition, innovation, and civil rights? Platform content moderation and liability, another boil-the-frog problem, like Tatiana discussed, in that we're forcing more and more platforms to have liability for the words and conduct of people that post on those platforms. And finally, you'll love this one, balancing the fight against fake news against the right of free expression and privacy. So I can share those in writing with anyone else, but these are the kind of things we're doing at IGF USA, and with this global audience, I encourage you are in your own regional and national IGFs to tackle these hard topics. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I'll turn to Tatiana Tropina quickly, and we'll soon have to close as well.
1 minute, 2 minutes intervention. Steve, I totally support what you say. You know what really bothers me here about all this fake news, content regulation, platform responsibility is that it is all going under the umbrella of cybersecurity. They stopped considering cybersecurity as a technical threat only, and now it's all over threat. Fake news, misinformation, whatever you can imagine. And even people who used to say that cybersecurity includes no content and whatever are now changing their opinions. And I believe this is the issue which we have to monitor closely because it expands the mission of any tech company, anyone.
Thank you, Tatiana. Anya Genko, please.
Thank you, Olivia. Very quickly, I actually wanted to keep silent, but Tarek at the beginning triggered me to say a few words, and now Steve definitely invited me to say a few words. What Steve said with this list of what the IGF USA is discussing, I could probably speak 3 days on what the countries and regions that have established their IGFs are discussing, and the things that you would hear would be very different. And I think that's very important to say. Also, I do understand that our discussion was focused mostly on the intergovernmental organizations and that global level, which is of our interest, especially speaking about the final decision makers. And I do support Jimson's comment when he said that those are long processes, so we're waiting for those decisions. And if somebody, one person decides to say no, then we don't have a decision and it's a waste of time, right? But I think what's very important to say that in the meantime, during that waiting period, there are so many of those communities that are self-organizing and making a change. They are not the final decision makers, but they found a way to influence those decision makers. If you ask the national IGF in Nigeria, they're going to tell you how the cybersecurity strategy was changed. Also, if you go to the Netherlands and you see a wonderful model of how the government cooperates with other stakeholders through the national IGF, then that's very encouraging. Very importantly, if you see so many youth communities that are now growing and organizing their own multi-stakeholder processes to discuss the topics that are of interest and influence others, then that's also encouraging. And in the context of ICANN, this is actually why I wanted to take the floor. What Tarek said at the beginning, is there any kind of fatigue when it comes about discussing about the process, how something is being discussed, and then what we're discussing? I would say that a hundred of countries and regions now that are having their own IGFs, so multi-stakeholder processes, are actually telling us that there is no fatigue, that there is new energy, and that maybe Marilyn, what said that we're entering the new phase, is very encouraging. And very much I would like just very quickly, I know that we are over time, to thank ICANN. Because if you look at who are the sponsors and direct supporters of these processes, then you would see ICANN at the top of those lists that are the in-kind supporters, but also concretely financial supporters. At the end of the day, ICANN is one of the dearest friends to the IGF and biggest supporters. And for that, thank you.
Thank you very much, Anya. Praise for ICANN. Tarek.
Thank you, Anya. But I just want maybe to correct a misunderstanding that you have mentioned. I was talking about fatigue not on a national and regional level in handling issues, but I was talking about fatigue in trying to solve global issues of internet governance in the lack of non-consensus as such when it comes to decision-making. This is what I meant, and I gave two examples of processes that I don't want to repeat that has been already mentioned. So this is what I was mean. The national and regional IGFs are booming. That's clear. The global IGF continue to has its role. But when it comes to really recommendation on consensus on recommendation going forward in different platforms on global issues, again, as such related to internet governance, I have there still some my questions of fatigue.
Thank you very much, Tarek. So clearly the debates and discussions are ongoing. Clearly ICANN has to continue being engaged in those discussions in its immediate overall ecosystem, and clearly we're running out of time. So I think I'll close it now. And I'd like to thank all of our panelists and everyone who has taken part in this discussion and debate. Thank you, everyone.
Olivier, could I just thank you as ever for moderating and spearheading this initiative? This is a session of the Cross-Community Working Group. In case there was any doubt and you thought you were coming to a GDPR discussion, you're really disappointed. But if you are if this is the first meeting you've been to or the first face-to-face session you've been to and you want to go on the list and you're not on the list for the Cross-Community Working Group, then come and see us and we'll put you on the list. Thank you.